All right. Thank you, everyone, and welcome to the September edition of ITAC. We've got a pretty full agenda today. I know we've lost a little bit of time getting through our logistics, but we will make the best use of the time we have before us. So I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. And Shay, would you do a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. Michael Dobb. Jake. Brian Kirkland.
Here.
Okay. Eddie Cook.
Here.
Gilbert Arunder.
Here.
Thank you. David Byers.
Here.
Thank you. Tim Romer.
Here.
Thank you. Lev Gornick. J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Representative Jeff Winninger. Senator Rick Gray. Richard Stebnick.
Rebecca Pereira here for Richard Stebnick.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Sorry, Shay, you cut out at the end of your statement there.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right, thank you very much. Okay. Well, again, welcome to the meeting. We'll go ahead and get started. Reminder, this is a public meeting forum, and in the agenda, we provided a link for public comment. Please feel free if you are a member of the public and wish to submit a comment. Please use that form, and the team will take care of that. We'll go ahead and step in to our first item on the agenda, which is approval of the minutes, which is the recording of our August 19th meeting.
So, Chairman, I move approval of the recording as the official minutes of the meeting.
Thank you, David. Do we have a second?
I'll second it. Tim Romer.
Thank you, Tim. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much. Next item on the agenda, we do have a consent item. This is the Department of Economic Security. They are doing a equipment refresh, and they submitted updated financials as they've needed to expand the scope of that refresh. I will ask the committee anyone who wishes to actually hear testimony on this, or are you comfortable moving this forward as a consent item?
So, Chairman, I move approval of the consent calendar.
Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Tim. Any discussion on that? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The consent agenda carries as approved, and we will move to our first item. That's a voting item on the agenda, which is the Arizona State Retirement System.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Yan Gao, and I am an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I am joined here by members of the Arizona State Retirement System who will introduce themselves now.
Yes, hi, this is Anthony Guarino. I'm the Deputy Director and Chief Operations Officer.
Hi, this is Dave King. I'm the Chief Information Officer. Jeff, are you on the call?
Well, this is Jeff Hickman. I'm the Information Security Officer.
And Martha Rosen is also on the call. She's not in the Google Meet, but she's on the phone.
Hello, this is Martha Rosen. I'm the Assistant Director for Administrative Services at the Arizona State Retirement System.
And I'm Trent Kendall. I'm the PMO Program Manager for the Arizona State Retirement System.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, in April 2020, ASRS placed the Information Protection and Security Project on hold and redeployed the team to another project, the Oracle Modernization Project. And one of the teams assigned to the Oracle Modernization Project was reassigned to a critical security project at the request of the ASRS Senior Management Team and Change Control Board. Both teams completed their obligations, the information protection and security is ready to be. ASRS is requesting the end date be revised. Revised end date has no significance to the project budget. Go. At this time, I will turn this to the Arizona Retirement System, then additional proposed and answer I have.
Can you move to the next slide, please? My name is Trent Kendall, and I'm going to be discussing the IPS, which stands for Information Protection and Security Project Change Request. Jan, thank you for that introduction. She covered the major points for what we're requesting. This PIDGE was originally approved in December of 2018 so that we could make modifications to our in-house pension administration system so that we could limit personally identifiable information and where it is displayed, and also enhance our security logging and make some minor modifications to the call center so we no longer ask for people to give us their SSN when they call us. We started the project on time, but then we encountered the results of a cash control audit that showed that we needed to shift priorities to take on that other project that had a higher risk profile. And we were also focusing on finishing our other PIDGE, which is a six-year, $10 million project to bring our pension administration system up to date. And that project is in the green. It is on schedule and also under budget at this time. So now that we've finished that CAF-controlled audit project, we're ready to restart this project. The team that originally started it was only working on analysis. They never wrote any code. So we're asking to shift the start date and the end date an equal amount. And I also include on this slide a summary of what our seven development teams are doing. We are working on security remediation full-time. We do production support full-time with a different team. And we're doing a spring upgrade for the technology that our pension administration system uses. And then we have this IPS PIDGE. And we have three other teams concurrently wrapping up the Oracle modernization PIDGE, which will be done by June 30th of 2021. Next slide, please. So the original start date was 11/15/2019. We're asking to shift it to about a week from now to 9/21/2020 and to push the proposed end date out by an equal amount. The total budget will remain as $3.07 million, and we're not increasing the scope of this project or reducing the scope. Next slide, please. This is the original milestones for our five phases. This is very high-level phases, and we show our original start date and our original finish date. For the once we move to the next slide, you'll see that we're sliding the start date and the finish date with one change. We're going to start phase two a little sooner because I think it's a better use of our time to work on phase one and phase two concurrently and to try to push those to production at the same time this April. Next slide, please. So now you can see that phase two, the duration is longer, but it's because we're starting it sooner. We're not delaying it. The most complicated phase remains phase four, which is increasing the amount of data that we can track in our logs. Next slide, please. So it's fairly straightforward because we're not trying to modify the amount of money that we're requesting and we're not trying to increase the scope. We're just pushing the dates. Does anyone have any questions that I can answer?
We'll open up to the committee members for any questions that you may have.
Mr. Chairman. This is Dave. I'll move to approve the PIDG changes as presented. This PIDG was previously approved. These, as explained, these are only date changes, so I'll move approval.
Mr. Chair, I may ask a question. It could be, it's not related to the approval.
That's okay. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Well, I just remember this PIDG as well, when we approved it, and we talked a lot about the timeline and the length of time for a security review or a security project going into 2023. I don't know, is there any commentary from ASSET or from ASRS on any effort to accelerate the timeline to meet the needs of this? It's weird to see a security project just continue to go on.
I can speak to that if ASSET doesn't have an opinion that they want to share. Go ahead, Jan.
Oh, no, I was going to say I would defer to the agency to answer the question.
I believe that we could shorten the time frame by throwing additional third-party vendor resources at this project, but it would come at the expense of our FTE staff. We try to retain as much knowledge as possible when we're working on these projects to remain in-house. If we throw more vendors at it, that knowledge leaves with those vendors. So in order to combat that, we will assign additional FTEs to the project. So we would need an additional project manager, possibly an additional business analyst, and additional QA support. And it additionally puts more stress on our business units because we rely on them to help us with regression testing, especially when we're going to be changing who has access to what. Like, they really rely on SSN. We're forcing them to use a different type of number. And I think this is pushing them to capacity. If we tried to increase the time or shorten the time frame, we would hear about it from our business units. But if we're continually looking at our currently active projects and evaluating their risk profile, if for some reason the items that are within the scope of this project become riskier, which we review monthly, we would accelerate the timeline.
Thanks, Trent. Rebecca, does that answer your question sufficiently, or do you have any follow-up?
No, yeah, thank you for that. That does answer my questions, and especially the last part. And, like, because I can completely understand that this was put on pause because something more risky came up. So to hear you talk about the process you do with within your staff to look and assess your resources is it sets me at ease a little bit to know that this is how you're managing your resources, because, of course, it's not something that I'm involved in.
I'm happy to help.
I see this as a classic. You're trying to balance the needs of the business, the risk, and the cost. And, I'm pleased to hear that you've got a regular conversation going on where you're doing a risk review and, the business is ready to engage, if and when appropriate to best serve the needs of your constituents and your stakeholders. All right, we have a motion from Mr. Byers to approve the project. We have a second.
Yeah, this is Jiggy. I second it, Chairman.
Thank you, Jiggy. Any discussion? If not, I'll ask the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. That motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Trent and the ASRS team.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Okay, our next item up will be the Department of Administration and talking about an advanced endpoint protection solution.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Shana Schaller, and I am an engagement manager with Department of Administration. I'm joined today by members of the Arizona Department of Administration's Enterprise Security Team. I will give a brief overview of this action item, then turn it over to the team to introduce themselves and provide a presentation of the project and the related change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on March 31st, 2020, the Arizona Department of Administration received approval by ADUA Asset for the Advanced Endpoint Protection Solution. During the proof of concept, it was determined that additional functionality was needed to further protect the state. The solution and additional functionality was deemed a critical need by the Enterprise Security Program Advisory Council to prevent viruses on state computers. This change request brings the development costs from $191,927 to $1,185,926. Previously, this change request was published to ITAC stating development costs increased to $1,328,419. However, due to the exceptional negotiation skills of this team, through the statewide SHI contract, they were able to save the state $142,493. I will now turn this over to the Enterprise Security team to present the project information and answer any questions you may have. Next slide.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Tim Romer. I am the Chief Information Security Officer for the state of Arizona at ADOA. It is very important for me to note up front that as an ITAC member, I am recusing myself from this vote because I am directly involved in this project. So without further ado, I will turn it over to Jen Dvorak for introductions.
My name is Jen Dvorak. I'm the ADOA Information Security Architect, and I am the technical lead on this project.
Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Pittman-Leeper. I'm the Enterprise Security Program Advisory Council, or SPAC, administrator. In that role, I oversee the multi-agency advisory group comprised of CIOs, CISOs, and agency directors from across the state. We have 13 voting members made up from various agencies with oversight of every data type that you could possibly imagine. SPAC is responsible for making recommendations to the state's Chief Information Security Officer, Tim Romer, on a variety of cybersecurity issues, including enterprise security tools and security policies. I'd like to also take this opportunity to introduce a couple more people that we have at the virtual table with us. Mr. Gary Heller is the CIO from the Department of Environmental Quality and is the chairman of SPAC, and Mr. Ryan Murray, the CISO from the Department of Revenue. Gary or Ryan, would you like to say a few words?
No, you're good, Jennifer. Good afternoon, everyone.
Thank you. Next slide. Since we did not originally need to come before ITAC, I wanted to give you a brief background about the CrowdStrike project. Earlier this spring, Asset approved a smaller portion of the CrowdStrike project to procure the advanced endpoint solution. Think of this as a next-generation antivirus software. That portion of the solution protects systems by using machine learning and behavioral analysis. It keeps users and endpoints or devices safe from malicious content, provides visibility and blocking of malicious use of scripting tools such as PowerShell, Batch, etc., identifies and blocks misuse of system utilities and other post-exploitation tools, and provides near real-time alert generation. Under SPAC's oversight, 10 agencies compared our current solution and looked at the market for new solutions. The multi-agency committee recommended SPAC change from the existing tool to CrowdStrike. The original pitch was for $191,000, and because it did not meet the threshold of ITAC, ADOA Asset approved this pitch in March. Next slide. Which brings us to today. One of SPAC's goals is to consolidate vendors and tools where practical. We identified that CrowdStrike had capabilities beyond the next generation antivirus, including endpoint detection response, managed detection response, and threat hunting. This additional functionality will increase our developmental costs from the original $191,000 to roughly $1.1 million. SPAC has defined this as a critical enterprise security tool and confirms that it is in alignment with CIS top 20 security controls and NIST standards. Next slide. To provide you a brief overview of how we selected CrowdStrike, SPAC has a process for reviewing all enterprise security tools. We have an annual budget that is based on a pro rata formula assessed on all FTEs. SPAC determines the tools that are appropriate for enterprising and allocates a portion of the budget toward those tools. Then SPAC established a multi-agency committee. Any agency is welcome to participate in those committees. The committee reviewed the existing tool. They also review and update the technical requirements for the specific tool. Once this was done, we engaged with the State Procurement Office, or SPO, and we reached out to the vendors on state contract that are eligible to provide security software solutions. We provided the vendors with the technical requirements and asked that they identify manufacturers that they feel might meet those needs and bring them in for demonstrations. The State Procurement Office then collects initial cost estimates from the vendors. The vendors that are considered too far out of the price range to be able to be negotiated into range are removed, and the committee is asked to choose which vendors they would like to engage for a $0 proof of concept. In this particular case, the committee selected two vendors for a proof of concept. Once the committee completed the proof of concept, they assessed each vendor and made a recommendation to SPAC. SPAC then reviewed the recommendation and decided to approve. That approval and recommendation was then sent to Mr. Tim Romer for final approval. The recommendation selected CrowdStrike as the Advanced Endpoint Enterprise Solution. After the CrowdStrike initially was approved, the multi-agency committee wanted to further review the CrowdStrike tool for additional capabilities. SPAC had a separate committee at that time that was looking at solutions with others for other functionality. The committee added the technical requirements and began testing the endpoint and managed detection response, or EDR and MDR, capabilities. The committee made the recommendation to SPAC to consolidate tools and budgets and use the CrowdStrike solution. SPAC and Mr. Romer approved that on August 11th. After that, I worked with multiple vendors to obtain quotes for this product at the lowest possible price. I'm going to turn it over to Jen now to talk a little bit more about the technology side of the solution.
Thank you, JPL. So this is first and foremost a SaaS platform. So it's hosted in the vendor's FedRAMP certified AWS cloud instance. So that is all to say that there's no infrastructure required. It's just a single agent that's installed on all the endpoints. And this is already underway as part of the advanced endpoint protection. So nothing further will need to be deployed by the agencies and simply licensing being turned on in the console that gives them this additional functionality. Next slide, please. So this is an enterprise solution, and it truly is because it's multi-agency, multi-tenant. Each agency has autonomy within their own tenant to make changes, to manage their own devices, and ADOA does have oversight into all of these areas. This increases the visibility of malicious processes and indicators of compromise across the state. So we'll be able to find these malicious things throughout the statewide solution. Again, it's FedRAMPed, so the data is protected according to the standards that we've set. And what we're hoping is to exponentially reduce cyber attacks and to address the increase in attacks we're seeing due to more work from home, and users just having more threats, and also just an increase in not having good cyber hygiene. We also, with this new tool, have the ability to remotely connect to devices, not reliant upon the state network because it is cloud hosted, and we can remotely access and remediate some of those threats. So what we're hoping is potential cost avoidance from an increase in data breaches and that sort of thing. I also wanted to talk briefly about the MDR component, which is the managed detection response. So this allows CrowdStrike to provide us with 24/7 eyes on glass, correlating our events throughout the console. So this is their security professionals helping us look at patterns of activities and behaviors that could indicate threat. And this is over and above just an automated or an AI capability. Next slide. So the project responsibilities, this is, it's kind of a beastly slide because we have stuff that agency, including ADOA, has to do, also that's shared by the vendor, and then what we're looking to the vendor contractors to provide. So ADOA set up the initial console configuration that's already completed as part of the Advanced Endpoint Protection Project. Deployment of the endpoints is the responsibility of the agencies, including ADOA, for ADOA and their managed agencies. Agencies must develop their own policies based on best practices provided by the vendor. ADOA has also been able to push out a baseline of policies to the agencies so that they can get started quickly. And so also agencies, including ADOA, need to designate technical resources that can do the installation, manage the alert, manage the policies. The shared responsibility is training. So the vendor is going to be providing our training, but the agencies need to carve out the time to participate in the training. Documentation, the vendor provides a very well-capable support portal and also just an overwhelming amount of documentation that the agencies must read and engage with those materials. Additionally, updates will be provided by the vendor. Agencies will just have to decide how those will get pushed to their endpoint. The vendor supports the platform, again, SaaS solution, FedRAMP, AWS. So they support all the underlying infrastructure as well. So nothing has to be done by the team. And they also provide a dedicated technical account manager that we can reach out to at any time, and also a support portal that everyone has access to. Next slide. And I'll hand it back over to JPL for the project timeline.
Thank you, Jen. I apologize for the small font on this slide, but the text box on the right-hand side shows the high level of the various project phases. Because the additional functionality does not require any additional deployment actions, we are just proposing to combine it into the existing advanced endpoint project timeline. We've already completed both initiation and planning. We're now in the process of deployment and have deployed more than 20,000 licenses statewide. The deployment will be completed by October 31st, which coincides with the expiration date of the original antivirus tool. Then we'll close out the project and begin fighting the bad guys. Next slide. This slide shows the initial budget with the antivirus solution only. The annual cost was $191,000, which represented a cost savings of more than $271,000 annually over the previous tool. Next slide. This slide shows the new cost going forward, including the additional EDR and MDR functionality. Each year, the annual cost will be around $993,000. The professional services are something that we purchase with all enterprise security tools to ensure that we have adequate assistance to thoroughly utilize the tool and make sure that we're getting the full functionality that the product offers across the state. This cost will increase to $117,000 annually and license cost of $876,000. Next slide. At a high level, this slide shows the actual spend that we had on CrowdStrike solution in FY20 and our projected spend each year thereafter. SPAC reviews tools every 3 years, so prior to any decisions in FY24, SPAC will review the solution again. Just to recap, the previous antivirus solution was $463,000 annually. The CrowdStrike antivirus solution purchased in the spring was $191,000. The previous SIM, MSSP, TDR with MDR solution from a previous vendor was budgeted at $1.083 million for FY21. That expected cost in this fiscal year for both of those solutions would have been $1.54 million annually. However, Jen and I worked with two vendors to get quotes for the CrowdStrike EDR, MDR, and antivirus solution. We negotiated with the vendor. The initial quotes came in at $1.2 million for the combined services. But through negotiations with the vendor, we were able to get a quote with a three-year commitment paid annually for $993,000. This represents a cost savings from reducing two vendors to a single vendor and negotiations of $553,000 annually. Next slide, please. Jen.
So these are our success measures that we came up with. So our project milestones are our communications plan, our training plan, and our complete deployment. So we are, as JPL mentioned, fully on track to do our complete complete deployment by October 31st, 2020. It will coincide again with the contract ending of the previous advanced endpoint protection tool. Our measures of success are 80% deployment by October 31st, 2020. So this is not 100% because we know that some agencies may not be currently using the previous tool. So that's why it's not 100%. But our goal is all the agencies that are currently on the current tool be moved over. What we're hoping for is 100% increase in visibility of malicious processes. This is not something that we collect currently or have visibility into. So it will provide us with that we did not have before. Additionally, a 100% increase in the ability to remotely remediate malicious activities. Again, this is not something that we have the ability to do across all agencies. So that will be something that is completely new and will provide value to the state. Next slide.
Shayna, did you want to review this slide or should I go ahead?
You can go ahead.
All right. What we are requesting is approval in the form of a change request to allow us the purchase of the EDR, MDR licensing of the CrowdStrike tool. The initial licensing for next generation antivirus has already been completed in the spring of FY20. The platform is already built and configured. The deployment is already in progress and will be completed by the end of October. And the additional functionality is automatic. It's just a licensing purchase. No additional development actions are required. Next slide. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we're ready for any questions you may have.
Okay, I'll turn it over to the committee members. Do you have any questions?
Mr. Chair, this is Eddie.
Go ahead, Eddie.
The previous product that we use here in the state was Silas. Is that correct? Silence?
That is correct.
Was that product able to meet the needs of our agencies?
Jen, I'm going to ask that you address that question, please.
Because the only reason why it seemed like there was some discussion about cost savings related to the existing tool, which I'm assuming is Silence. Love to know where was Silence falling short on as it relates to their cost.
I can speak just to the cost. It was roughly $463,000 annually. So anytime that we can find a solution to give us same or better coverage, we would be interested in something like that. But I want Jen to address the actual technical differences between the tools.
Yes, I'll address some of those technical aspects. I would say that we overall were pleased with Silence. I mean, anecdotally, I can tell you that we had agencies that were getting, some kind of ransomware variant on their devices pretty regularly. And that just went away when we deployed it. I think some of the pain points from the agencies were the multi-tenancy. It didn't exist. So all changes to their policies or or allow listing or block listing had to go through the ADOA team. So for them to have autonomy within their own tenant with us the capabilities to provide oversight or assistance was, that's a huge upgrade. Additionally, Cylance did have an optional product that we could add on called Optics, which would give us some of this EDR, MDR functionality. We looked at also purchasing that, but again, the price point was much, much higher to add that on. And we didn't get all the capabilities that we're getting with this new product. We didn't get the ability to remotely remediate remotely remediate malicious processes. We also wouldn't have the ability for that managed detection response, which is the 24/7 eyes on glass kind of thing. So I think the multi-tenancy was the biggest pain point for the agencies.
The only reason why I asked about the cost, as you said, you found about $400,000 in savings. What you're asking the committee is that the scope is going to expand to include some other technologies within CloudStrike, which is looking to be about, over $1 million. So I guess the question I have, these additional scope that is being modified to include these other, I'm going to call other enterprise technologies within CloudStrike, it seems like the $400,000 savings, well, it looks like you're spending more to add more feature and capacity or capabilities within, I guess, our current tool. Is that a correct assessment?
Let me see if I can't try to help address that. We had in SPAC a separate committee that was looking at other enterprise tools, and we had a whole separate vendor in addition to Cylance that was providing us some functionality. We are now able to rope all of that into the single product, single vendor. So it would be more appropriate if you would look at all of the entire budget, which would be roughly $1.5 million a year for both of those products, the Cylance tool and the former tool that we used on the MSSP and SIEM side of the house. That all is now being able to be combined into the single CrowdStrike platform with the EDR, MDR functionality.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Can any of the team members tell me what the cost per endpoint is?
I can, but I need a minute to use a calculator.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
including professional services, taxes, and everything, $27.58 per seat cost.
Thank you.
Brian, I heard you want to say something. Go ahead.
Yeah, just a generic question, a quick question. You talked about the process of how this was selected and the involvement from the different agencies. And they were invited to participate, but I don't think you ever called out how many actually did participate. I'm just curious with this type of a solution to make sure that enough of them participated to make sure that we're not going to have gotchas in different departments.
Sure. We had 13 different agencies participating. Some agencies had multiple individuals participating. We did have participation from what I would consider the big agencies. They were all involved. And then we did have participation even at the smaller levels. Both Ryan from DOR, he had a full team present, as well as Gary from DEQ. I can get you a list of those agencies if you'd like, but like I said, I believe it was 12 or 13 agencies with 20-some professionals participating.
That's sufficient. Just want to make sure you have the coverage.
Yeah, if I can, I'm going to pick on you and ask you to speak a little bit about, the SPAC process and how the agencies engaged in, reviewing this and participating in this process. Because I think the collaboration is important.
Yeah, certainly, JR, I'm happy to. So at SPAC, what we're looking at, I think we're up to 19 or 20 controls right now. that we're trying to put in place automated tools and controls to protect the state as a whole. Obviously, the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. I mean, we've all heard that before. So we're looking at implementing enterprise solutions across the state. So we want voice of the customer, voice of all the agencies, boards, commissions. I don't know how many are represented on SPAC, but quite a few. And then what we do is one of our goals is it's very, extremely difficult and expensive to manage 20 different controls with 20 different vendors, 20 different pricing structures. So as Jennifer said, every 3 years or on its renewal date, we look at competing controls and other controls that could compensate or that could better meet the needs of the state of Arizona. As you know, software hacking, the hackers get more mature, you know, the software is maturing every 6 months. So we really want to, we form a committee, a cross-functional committee. Some of the members are CISOs, some are security analysts, data analysts. We've got a mixture on the committees that go out and actually look at these tools, attend the vendor's demos, learn from the vendor, start evaluating the tools, comparing it to the NIST controls, the controls that we're looking to, the outcomes that we're looking to implement, and see which of those tools or combination of tools or vendors best meets that for the best price for the state and still gets the jobs done from Tim's perspective, doesn't keep him up at night. So that's kind of what we do from SPAC. So again, upon renewal, we look at all tools. We look to see, some vendors, mature their tools faster than others. So it's a constant changing of the puzzle pieces, if you will. There's more artificial intelligence. There's more, robotic automation in some of these analytical models. Everything is changing. So we constantly look at this. And then what we do is we typically, as Jennifer said, we pilot it with all the agencies to make sure that it's a reasonable lift for the agencies. It's cost effective for the states and it protects the individual agencies. Access has to deal with, PHI and HIPAA. Revenue has to deal with revenue information and corrections with the CGIS. And you have all these other security rules and regulations that we have to try to get some common tools. In some cases, a common enterprise tool doesn't work for everybody, and the agency might have to have their own supplemental tool because of additional security requirements. So that's kind of the process. JR, is that?
Yeah, that was sufficient, Gary. Thank you. I just wanted to give the committee a flavor of that. And maybe the last thing I'll say just real quickly, in terms of SPAC, who all has been invited to participate on SPAC? And I guess maybe more of the commentary is just affirming, that SPAC is an open forum that all agencies are invited to participate. It's not a by invitation only, nor is it exclusive.
That's correct. So, there's additional agencies that are members of SPAC that didn't volunteer to be part of this individual multi-agency committee, but they were still involved in the overall oversight of the committee as they selected this tool. So you're talking about quite a bit of hands in the pot, making sure that this is the right solution. And I believe in the chat, we saw some other people that are part of this call that have been, involved in SPAC or have been involved in this actual selection of this tool.
All right. Thanks. Any other questions from the committee? All right. Well, back to you, Shayna.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSA is recommending this change request be approved with the following condition. Should expenses exceed the estimated cost by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology, scope of work, or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the page to reflect the changes and submit to ADOA asset for review and approved by ITAC prior to further expenditure of funds.
All right, thanks, Shannon. Anyone have any questions on those conditions and the recommendation? All right, I will take a motion with regards to the project.
This is Brian. I'll motion approve with the contingent.
Second.
I'm sorry, I missed who seconded.
Dave Byers.
Oh, thanks, Dave. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And we will go ahead and note Tim's abstention from this voting cycle, but that we still had quorum with five members voting. All right, thank you very much. We will move on to our next item, which is from the Department of Health Services and their electronic care reporting project, electronic case reporting, I'm sorry.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I am an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Health Services who will introduce themselves now, followed by a brief overview of the project.
Great. Hi, my name is Susan Robinson, the informatics advisor for the Department of Health.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Teresa Gio, also an informatics supervisor for the Department of Health.
Hi, this is Paula Mattingly. I'm the CIO at ADHS.
Hello, this is Ravi Pitti, Enterprise Architect, Department of Health Services.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Health Services receives communicable disease reports for a number of different conditions and syndromes from healthcare providers, facilities, and laboratories per Arizona Administrative Code. These reports are received through a variety of methods, including fax, phone, email, or direct duplicative entry by users in the integrated system MEDSIS, also known as the Medical Electronic Disease Surveillance Intelligence System. The Arizona Department of Health Services is proposing a partnership with HealthCurrent, the state of Arizona's health information exchange, to leverage their data sets to improve and reduce the overall reporting burden for the state, healthcare providers, and the Arizona Department of Health Services. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Next slide, please. Again, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Teresa Gio, and again, informatics supervisor for the Arizona Department of Health Services. And Ravi and I will be going back and forth to present this information to you today. But we are very excited to share some details about our proposed electronic case reporting project. So we'll start with some background that's also on this slide. But as Haley mentioned, per Arizona Administrative Code, ADHS receives disease reports for a number of conditions and syndromes. And these reports come in with information about the patient, condition or disease, lab testing, and we receive these reports in a variety of ways, including fax, phone, or that direct entry into Arizona's Integrated Disease Surveillance System. Processing these reports is very manual and therefore time-consuming and burdensome to not only our healthcare reporters, but also staff at the health department. This proposal involves a partnership with HealthCurrent, the Arizona Health Information Exchange, in order to leverage an existing source of data. The HIE receives admit, discharge, and transfer data stored in electronic health record systems from over 90% of Arizona healthcare providers. And a majority of this data overlaps with the data that is required in a communicable disease report. So using this rich data that already exists within the HIE, the project proposes that HealthCurrent create standardized messages using the HL7 CDA or FHIR formats to transmit the data to public health on behalf of healthcare reporters. Allowing the HIE to create these messages takes advantage of the existing subject matter expertise in HL7 messaging and reduces the burden on healthcare facilities where it is often difficult to find the time and subject matter experts to implement this type of electronic data exchange. Next slide, please. Now, I mentioned some benefits already in the previous slide, but also wanted to highlight some additional benefits at a couple of different levels. Specifically for ADHS, this project has the potential for major impact, including increased timeliness of reporting and data quality. Oftentimes, because of the manual nature of reporting, ADHS does not receive these reports within the specified timeline that's written into administrative code, which can range from within 24 hours to up to 5 days, depending on the urgency or potential severity of a condition. These delays have significant downstream impacts, such as delays in case investigation and public health control actions that would prevent further spread. Additionally, our proposed solution includes the use of AIMS, a national platform that is supported and maintained by the Association of Public Health Laboratories. Use of this platform takes advantage of a centralized location for the routing of reports for out-of-state residents, further reducing the need for manual out-of-state reporting to respective health departments via fax. Next slide, please. So the COVID-19 pandemic has really demonstrated how public health information systems and processes need to be modernized in order to keep up with large volumes of data, and Arizona is no exception. Over the past few years, ADHS has been planning to implement electronic case reporting, but was hindered due to lack of funding. With the current pandemic came some supplemental funds awarded by the federal government, really giving us an opportunity to implement important changes that would not only help with our response activities now, but also pull ADH into the future and prepare for our next pandemic response. So I also wanted to mention that the electronic case reporting project aligns really well with the national strategies that are set forth by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to modernize reporting processes through the use of electronic data exchange and standardized vocabulary, ultimately improving data quality and timeliness of reporting. ADHS has been in a long-standing partnership with the CDC, using federal dollars awarded through cooperative agreements to support integrated systems and electronic data exchange. These funds have allowed Arizona to stay at the forefront of health information systems, and ADHS has been called upon multiple times to share lessons learned and best practices with colleagues around the country, and we see this as another opportunity to highlight Arizona's innovative and forward-thinking processes. Next slide, please. So to summarize again, our proposed solution is to leverage the existing data within Arizona's Health Information Exchange and format this data into a standardized and machine-readable format for reporting on behalf of Arizona healthcare reporters. At the end of this project, we expect to see a major reduction in manual entry processes for all stakeholders, including ADHS, improved data quality, and near real-time reports of communicable diseases that are impacting Arizona residents. For the next slide, Ravi will be going over some additional details related to the procurement and technology portions for this project.
So the two sections here talk about procurement contract-wise as well as technology requirements. The first piece is we are working on a contract with HealthCurrent, which would have all the pieces of this project, which is basically phases. Phase one is to develop and configure a couple of hospitals so that we can validate the messages coming from HealthCurrent. And phase two would be to onboard additional hospitals and get to a volume that makes sense financially. And then we are also proposing to hire a few contractors for the work that has to be done, technology work that has to be done on the ADHS side to configure the systems that we currently have, which process the ELR processing, to expand it to ECR processing. And then we also have are proposing to add additional project infrastructure for hardware and software. The technology is standard HL7 messaging that we are very familiar with. We have been doing this for the last 12 years for the ELR project. We will use SFTP transport mechanisms for data coming from AIMS, which is the inter-partner network. We have all the servers on AWS infrastructure. We'll be expanding our infrastructure there for the additional functionality. We use Rhapsody integration engine. We use BizTalk and Rhapsody integration engines right now, but the new process will only be using Rhapsody integration engine. For databases, we'll be adding additional SQL database instances to accommodate the new data sets. And we have a custom application, which is a small interface to the raw data that's being pumped into our databases to verify and validate messages and correct them and resubmit them. Next slide, please. This is a visual. Teresa, you want to talk a little bit about this?
Sure. Yeah, so I spoke a little bit earlier about the current reporting processes, so through the fax, email, manual entry on this slide. So this is that visual representation of that process. in very briefly, we have our healthcare providers that are sending reports in these manual ways, but everything is ultimately ending up in the ADHS surveillance systems for further investigation and analysis. Diving into some more details around time and cost required for these processes, in 2019, ADHS received close to 250,000 communicable disease reports. This equates to a little over 40,000 hours required for manual entry into the surveillance system, not only at the healthcare reporter level, but also including ADHS staff time. Cost would then be just over $1 million on that side. But then we have additional processing, like routing of reports to the appropriate disease-specific programs, as well as redaction and separating pages, which would add in an additional $70,000. So our total estimated cost for 2019 is just around $1.08 million. Now, from a timeliness standpoint, we look at when a patient has been seen or diagnosed by a healthcare provider to when the report is actually created in the system. And on average, it's around 3 to 4 days. Now, 3 to 4 days doesn't sound like a very extended amount of time, but if you would just imagine on a normal, maybe pre-COVID-19 day, how many places and how many people you could potentially see in that time span, and it becomes really significant, especially for our public health investigators that are tracking down all of these potential exposures. Now, along with this slide, I also want to mention that we in public health assume underreporting. So the true number of disease reports may actually be higher than this. There's plenty of providers that are unaware of the reporting requirement or do not have the staff or time to complete reporting. And the proposed solution takes advantage of systems that are already in place at provider offices and used for their day-to-day operations. So we would also expect to see an increase in the overall number of reports in the future. Next slide, please. For our future process, we are expecting to use this proposed solution to go from 0% of automated case reporting to around 90% in the next 3 to 5 years. So in this diagram, we have the inserted role of the HIE that would cover the large majority of case reporting because they are already receiving 90% of the data or 90% of the Arizona healthcare providers. Now we've left the manual process in place as well as to cover the remaining 10%. And as additional facilities and providers onboard to the HIE, we should see that continue to shift. All right. I think in the next few slides, Ravi is going to go over some additional details on the proposed technology specifications and the project management aspects.
Yes, this is a workflow of what's happening currently and what is our proposed solution going to look like in future. So we are adding another level at the top, which is outside our current existing system. Health Current would be working with the hospitals, getting the feeds directly from the hospitals, transforming the message to the guidelines that we are proposing to them, which will be a standard HL7 format with our Arizona-specific mapping guideline. And that will be transmitted over to Ames Hub, which would then send the messages depending on the jurisdiction of the person. If the person is in Arizona, tested for something that is reportable, but he is originally from another state, Ames directly sends that over to the other state and then sends everything else to us. So we would pick that up and process it through our integration engine, parse that data into our databases, and then forward it down to the integrated disease surveillance system. So everything green is new. Everything that is in purple is something that we would have to tweak to accommodate the new process. Everything white stays as is. Next slide, please. The responsibilities of the stakeholders in this project. ADHS will manage the contract oversight, the overall project management, the subject matter experts for the ELR program, all technical and functional project management resources on the ADHS side of development. We will add HL7 CDA functional specialists. We will do all the support and maintenance work on the technical side. We will also have all the system administration work here. HealthCurrent will have their own functional specialists to work on their data mapping, which is our guide. They will also have a development team to change or make changes to their data sets according to our mapping guide. They will work with the submitters, recruitment and coordination of the submitter, the hospitals. And then they have their own project management team to manage their side of the project. The shared responsibilities are basically the scope and planning of the project. We would have weekly meetings on the status of the project, and the monitoring would be done on that. Next slide, please. This is the structure, the org structure for the project setup. The technology services will have an ITS liaison who would work with the program management. The program management will have two different folks of groups. One is the IT side of ADHS and one is HealthCurrent. They would be both reporting to the program management. And we will also have a solutions architect group, which would be an oversight for any architectural decisions on this project. Next slide, please. This is a very high-level project timeline as of today. This has moved a couple of times so far. We were initially planning on starting this in July, August timeframe, but we are here today. If the project gets approved, we will kick the project off as soon as the contracts are in place, which are already being drafted. The initiation tasks will start ASAP. The design phase would be part of this. The detailed scoping and onboarding of the initial two hospitals or hospital networks. And then phase one development will go through for a little over 6 months. And then the rest would be phase two. Next slide, please. The total project cost is over $4,200,000, out of which $4 million is for professional services, which includes HealthCurrent contract as well as ADHS technical resources, that there will be contract resources for the entirety of the project. The hardware costs are broken down annually. This hardware cost is basically for any startup hardware, basically if we need to get the workspaces for the new staff or buying them laptops and all the AWS infrastructure that we will be adding to expand our process. The software costs are one-time costs for Rhapsody Integration Engine licenses. These licenses are communication points, actually, that we can use only so many communication points for so many processes. We are running out of those, so we have to expand those. And then the additional year would be for the support and maintenance of those licenses. Year 3, 4, and 5 are support costs, operational costs, basically for AWS infrastructure and the software support. Next slide, please. We have a total budget approval from the CARES Act ELC fund grant, which is $5,013,000. We are requesting a little over $4,200,000 at this point, with additional $200,000 for year 3, 4, and 5 operation support. This budget gives us a little bit of breathing room if in case something goes over our estimates for the next 18 to 20 months. But anything after that would be under the federal grants that we have, operational budget. Next slide, please. Teresa.
Okay. Thanks, Ravi. So as part of this proposal, we also want to make sure that we understand what success looks like and how we can measure it. So we have this broken out, as Ravi mentioned, this project broken out into two phases. And that first phase is working with those pilot hospitals and coming up with the best options and procedures for electronic case reporting implementation. And then using what we learned from phase one, phase two allows us to really ramp up on the onboarding and where we should see some rapid increase in electronic case reporting through our HIE partnership. To measure this success, we can look at a few different aspects, including costs and time savings, number of reports received through this automated process, and we can analyze data quality before and after electronic case reporting is implemented. Next slide, please.
So again, this slide provides some additional details surrounding phase one and phase two of the projects over the next 18 months. I think we've talked through most of this slide, so let's go ahead and move on. So next slide, please. All right, so next, in conclusion, the ADHS electronic case reporting project that we're seeking approval for brings a lot of advantages, including better serving public health, connecting partners and stakeholders, enabling data exchange, and with that, creating efficiencies that would deeply impact how we view and practice public health. I want to say thank you so much for your attention this afternoon. It is greatly appreciated, and I know we went over a lot in a very short amount of time. So, Haley, do you want us to go ahead and jump into the Q&A session, or I'll hand it off back to you?
If you guys are ready for Q&A, I'm ready when you are.
All right, committee members, what questions do we have? Okay, I'll start off then. To me, the two things that to me are highly critical for success are going to be the delivery by Health Current of the data in a usable form to your requirements. So I did see that you have testing and validation. I saw that there's a project sign-off milestone. My question is, do you also have the appropriate contractual language in place to ensure that you get what you need?
Yes, I'll take that
question. Robbie.
So. I'll take that question. Thank you. Yes, we have worked with our procurement office, and we have a draft put together. That okay. draft was sent over to Haley and asset team earlier for review. Basically, the $3 million that we are contracting with the Health Current is based off milestones, and payments are based off of milestones. So every phase has certain milestones that they have to hit for delivery so we can pay them. That doesn't mean that, after four milestones, everything is rosy and they stop. So we do have experience. So this is something that we have been doing for 12 years. Our ELR process is very similar to what we are going to be doing here in this project, except for the fact that all the data is going to come from a central location instead of we connecting individually with multiple submitters. So there is help from our side to Health Current, and Health Current can tap into APHL because CDC is on board with this initiative and they are going to support us. So there is a lot of help. There's a lot of technical assistance available to handhold every stakeholder in this project.
Okay, thank you. My next question is whether it's in the contract or at least have there been discussions, agreement by Health Current that they, whatever it is that they're creating on their side from a code standpoint, that they are agreeing to wrap that into their system maintenance process going forward, that they're responding, are they taking responsibility to maintain that? If they do a change in their system and they break the interface that you've just paid them to build, who's responsible for repairing it and maintaining it? I understand the changes could be a separate engagement, but how is the interface being maintained going forward?
Okay. The changes that Health Current would be making for this project would not be system changes. What they will be making is data capture changes. So a provider today might be sending them 30 different fields of data, and we might ask Health Current to provide us 35 different elements. So Health Current would be working with the provider to add additional data. So their EHR, which is again hosted environment, next gen system, which is on AWS, is capable of that without any changes to add the additional elements that we would need. The only change that they would be doing is not on their system itself, but on our message development, which would be a much a different message than what we get today. So that is a interface, and I think we will have some language. We should have some language in the contract saying that all those will be maintained and supported so that the systems, there are no outages for our system.
Ravi, if I could just add a little bit to that too, since these this project is proposed using federal dollars, there is some language also in our cooperative agreements that if it's funded out of federal dollars, that things like the source code, even though if it's a third party vendor, if it is made for public health use, that it would also be available to us, and not only to us, but to CDC as well, to potentially share the same solution with other states. So there could be other states that are utilizing something, a similar approach with their HIE. So we would have to share that as well.
Okay. And JR, let me just add, this is Paula, that we've been working with HealthCurrent for several years strategically trying to get public health as a part of their roadmaps. And that they really do want to help us and evolve how public health reporting is done. So this has been something we've talked about for several years.
Okay. Thanks, Paula.
And okay. One last addition to that is we would always keep the integration system access to all the providers because they would need that to access information from that. So in case there is an outage for a short term, they would still have the ability to manually input the data like they do today.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Any other questions from the committee members? All right. Haley, back to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following condition. Should development costs exceed the approved estimates by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology scope of work or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the PIDGE to reflect the changes and submit it to ADOA ASSET and ITAC if required for review and approval prior to further expenditure of funds.
All right, thanks, Haley. Committee members, any questions on those conditions? If not, we will take a motion with regard to the project.
So, Chairman, I'll make a motion, but a question, too.
Yeah.
Is the 10%, they gave us two numbers. I think it was like about around a $4 million budget, wasn't it? But there's a $5 million appropriation or grant that they have. So is the 10% on the $5 million or the $4 million?
Mr. Chairman, the 10% will be on the development part of the budget, so closer to the $4 million that you saw.
Okay. The agency's okay with that?
Yes.
Yes.
Then I'll move approval of the project with the conditions recommended by the staff.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Do we have a second?
Gil Aranti, I'll second it.
Thank you, Gil. All right, gentlemen, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries unanimously for approval. Thank you, Department of Health Services, Teresa, Robbie, and Paula. And we'll move on to our next item.
Thank you. Members of the committee.
Okay, our next item is from the Department of Environmental Quality.
Mr. Chairman, committee, my name is Yan Gao. I'm engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm here joined by members of the Department of Environmental Quality who will introduce themselves now.
Yes, good afternoon. This is Gary Heller. I'm the CIO at ADPQ.
Mark Redda, Deputy Chief Information Officer.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Department of Environmental Quality has developed a scalable platform called MyDEQ, and services are added incrementally to the platform each year. Since 2015, the department has implemented 82 services out of a catalog of 147 services being prioritized. The department is requesting continuation of the multi-year program to bring 6 new services online for Arizona businesses by the end of fiscal year 21. The total project development budget is $1.29 million. At this time, I will turn over to the Department of Environmental Quality to present additional project information and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and everyone else on the call. This is Sudhakar Adda again. My DEQ is DEQ's permitting, compliance, and reporting portal. Arizona businesses are the primary users of this portal. ADEQ began working on this, on the MyDEQ application almost a few years ago, in response to the Arizona businesses' demand for faster permits, expanded compliance assistance, and easier interpretation of the complex regulations. That's how the program has started years ago. Since no two permits or the compliance process are alike, the first year or two, we focused on standing up our platform with a reusable service set. And the last few years, we've been focusing on standing up the individual permits and the compliance services. That's how we've reached 82 services available to the customers and in use as of June this year. Next slide, please. Just like we do every year, we'd like to demonstrate the progress of the project or the program before we ask for additional approvals or authorizations. We measure progress using the customer adoption, overall agency's response time to permits or the compliance submissions or the compliance assistance requests, and our response time to any environmental events. Since we have launched MyDEQ, we have 17,000 facilities or the Arizona businesses using MyDEQ. That's 17,000 of a total 28,000 that we have. And these 17,000 are the most heavily utilized, most heavily using businesses that we have. In addition, the response times for the permits on MyDEQ has tremendously gone down. We have seen 99% improvement in some of the permits where there is no manual intervention required. There is no further validation required. Some of our bigger general permits like stormwater are completely online. There is no more paper coming in. Of all the permits on MyDEQ, more than 80% are completely online. The rest of the 20%, we have barely 10% coming on paper yet. Next slide, please. In addition to that, what we have seen is we have so far approximately 5,500 active accounts on MyDEQ. These are individual businesses. In addition to that, we have 42,000 transactions performed just the last year alone. In terms of percentage, that's 60% of all transactions we conduct with Arizona businesses. So in the past 4 years, we went from 0 to 60% of all transactions happening online. EPA has a calculator to determine the return on investment or the benefit. Based on all the permits that we have deployed so far, they estimate that the Arizona economy is seeing a $154 million benefit. Next slide, please. In the last few years, we have seen MyDEQ being recognized. Sometimes we have gone out and seek the recognition. Sometimes we were asked to submit actually application for recognition. Especially in the last, or in this year, we have been recognized for on the CIO 100 Enterprise Excellence Award. Gary Heller is going to receive that award in the next month. So especially this award is critical because we are competing with not other businesses, not other state and the government agencies. We are competing with private enterprises. Some of them are the Fortune 50. Next slide, please. Um, just like every year, the problem we have is the paper. 5 years ago, we used to have all the permits coming in as paper, and the response time was a lot. We used to take at least 90 days to respond to some of the permits. We used to have a lot of back and forth with the customers because of the poor data quality issues. And we had customers complaining that the regulations are burdensome and they couldn't interpret actually the regulations. What we have seen historically with the implementation of MyDEQ is we have been able to reduce the overall data quality issues. We have seen improved response time from the agency. We have seen savings within the agency. A lot of the data entry activities, the people that are performing the data entry activities, the staff are now using, you know, we are deploying them for compliance assistance and modeling efforts. Next slide, please. In terms of the solution, we would like to continue to stand up 6 more services this year, focused on underground storage tanks. The leaking underground storage tanks require sometimes assistance from the state for the cleanups. And currently, most of these cleanup assistance requests are coming in via paper. So we would like to move all those requests online so that we can validate both the request and be able to reconcile the estimates to expenses that they submit to us. In terms of the technology stack, we are migrated to cloud. We are on Arizona. We are on Amazon Web Services. For the front end, we use HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and we use Angular and Bootstrap framework. Most of our business layer is built using Java and JavaScript. In terms of the databases, we use Oracle, a little bit of SQL Server, and Mongo database. We use GitHub for version control, and most of our projects are run through Agile Scrum. Hence, we use Atlassian Jira and Confluence and Trello for project management. Next slide, please. MyDEQ, as a program over the last few years, we've been executing it within the agency. So the control is with the agency. We use a mix of staff and contractors to develop the code, but the project management, the architecture, as well as the communication training of the users is completely with the agency. We share with the contractors, we share the responsibility to develop and deploy the code base and do the unit and integration testing. Contractors exclusively, we have a Scrum Master from an individual Scrum Master that performs the Scrum, that takes care of the individual sprints. He's a contractor, and that along with the system testing is there other responsibilities that they perform exclusively. Next slide, please. In terms of the program structure, the way we're organized is we have a solutions group that provides the application architecture, database design, and infrastructure architecture is mostly our staff, and we have operations completely with our agency, again with the staff. All the production support and maintenance is done by our staff. The development work is split into 2 Scrum teams. Each Scrum team has the Scrum Master is shared between the teams, but all the other roles like the business analyst and the UI developers, Java developers, all the developers and the testers are grouped into individual Scrums. And it's a mix of staff and contractors. Next slide. In terms of the timelines, for each business process or the service that we want to stand up, We propose to complete them by June 2021. Most of our business process, we start with the Kaizen, where we understand how the business process works today on paper and how we would like to streamline it for online. And then we do the pencil sketches, we develop mockups, and there's an extensive voice of customer. We bring in the businesses, Arizona businesses, at the time of the design and the mockups, again at the time of testing the application in our user acceptance, during the user acceptance testing phase, and then we roll out the application. So as you can see, we are planning to complete the project by June of 2021. Next slide, please. We anticipate to spend around $1.29 million on this phase of the project, out of which $20,000 is to continue the software licenses like Atlassian, Jira, and Confluence. The operations cost today, we see around approximately $50,000. To be exact, it's $40,000 on the AWS plus a few licenses to continue the operations, to software licenses to continue the operations. We don't anticipate to see any change to that operation cost. So most of the $1.29 million that we're asking is for the development and just for this year. Next slide, please. We have various success measures on the business side, on the program side. What we would anticipate to see is we plan to see additional 2,000 facilities to be on MyDQ platform. Just like with every other online service that we have deployed, we anticipate a 90% improvement in the agency's turnaround time, overall turnaround time, and 60% improvement in the environmental compliance. Meaning the time it takes for a facility to come back into compliance if there are any issues. This happens faster because we find out compliance issues within 48 hours of the issue being reported, or actually within 48 hours of the data being coming to the agency. Using the EPA calculator, we anticipate a $7 million annual economic benefit to the state of Arizona. And we anticipate 80% reduction in the data entry efforts from the staff, and they'll be mostly focusing on compliance, monitoring, and assessments. Next slide, please. I'm open for any questions.
Okay, any questions from the committee members?
Mr. Chair, I have a couple questions.
Go ahead, Rebecca.
They're related to the budget. The $1.2, almost $1.3 million for professional and outside services, I just wanted to know if that included any pass back to DEQ for admin costs.
No, it does not.
And then the second question is, since this is coming out of your operating budget, and I think in the past, thanks to the skinny budget, there wasn't any additional funding this year for DQ, my DQ. So I was wondering if you could just tell me where that funding was coming from in your operating budget.
So this is Gary, Rebecca. So we're building on the existing infrastructure. We just completed the migration to the cloud of all of our services and our workloads. Mm-hmm. So the six new online services that we're adding and some additional enhancements along with it, they don't add any additional burden to our infrastructure. The transaction increase in volume were built to sustain more than that currently in the cloud. So between the Amazon and VMware and the Citrix that we have in the cloud, we're more than able to handle that and even more. So there'll be no additional incremental costs.
Oh, no, Mr. Chair and Gary, that makes sense in moving, finding the capacity within your budget. I was just, which fund source does that come from?
Oh, I'm sorry, the fund source. Okay. The fund source for our operational costs are all from our indirect budget. That's just our standard approved agency operating budget for IT. Okay. We have a base budget every year, and that's included in our base budget, Rebecca.
Okay, thanks. That answers my question. I appreciate it.
I'm sorry.
No, the answer to the first question, too, makes complete sense.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Gary and Rebecca. Any other questions?
Hey, JR, can I just add one more plug? I mean, Sudhakar mentioned it, but we were really, you know, we were really surprised to win that CIO 100 award. This is the Fortune 50 and Fortune 500 companies that their technology innovations are just mind-boggling. So the award we won is our agile development processes that we've used to build MyDEQ out over the past few years. So it's basically the integration of the Lean and the AMS, the Arizona Management System, and our agile practices with heavily reliance on voice of the customer throughout the whole process. We've given national presentations on this, a basically award-winning process that we're using to build the system out. So I just wanted to put the plug in for the team and for the state of Arizona. I mean, it's been really good. It's worked really well. Our customers are really happy.
Excellent. Thanks, Gary.
You're welcome.
I've been observing this project for some time. And one of the things that I really appreciate is the approach that you've taken where, by standing up a scalable platform to begin with, now you're just in a mode of saying, you know, for whether it's you come up with your own funding in this case or any funding that you've submitted a budget issue for, you're able to specify exactly what you're going to deliver for that money and incremental value associated with it and using an agile process to deliver it, which is phenomenal. So thanks for the great efforts of your team. All right, I'll turn it back to Yan.
Mr. Chair, ADOA Asset is recommending that the PIDGE be approved with the following standard condition: should expenses exceed the estimated costs by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology, scope of work, or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the PIDGE to reflect the changes and submit it to ADOA Asset for review and approval by ITAC prior to further expenditure of funds.
All right. Thank you, Yan. Any questions on those conditions? All right. Hearing none, I will entertain a motion with regard to this project.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve.
Thank you, Eddie.
Second.
Do we have a second? Thank you, Dave. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Gary and Sudhakar, and please keep up the great work.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, that concludes our voting items for the agenda. We do have two informational updates. The next one is from the Department of Education.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, again, my name is Yan Gao. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm here joined by members of the Department of Education who will reintroduce themselves now, followed by an informational update to the overall status of their school finance payment system project.
Thank you, Yan. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I hope everyone can hear me. Okay. Next slide. My name is Satish Patisapu. I am the Chief Information Officer providing the update for Department of Education today. And in the interest of time, I am accompanied by several members of my team. I will speak on their behalf, introduce them. We have Whitney Marsh, who is from the Department of Administration, Department of Education's Administration. She's the Deputy Chief of Staff, who is on the line. Also, we have Lyle Friesen, Associate Superintendent, Business Owner for School Finance. Brito Augustine, Chief Technology Officer. from IT, Kathy Beck, who is the program manager from IT, and Nan Nesvik, who is the project manager for the School Finance Payment System project. Depending on the nature of the question, if it pertains to them, one of them will chime in and they will introduce themselves at that point in time. Okay. The brief background on the project is that School Finance is responsible for processing student data and an approximate of 6 billion of calculations every year in distributing state aid. The technology that is used and the infrastructure that is that it was built on is a very old platform. It's a legacy which basically requires several manual calculations and processing time varies depending on the situation, and the system is on the verge of not being dependable. The proposal and the goal for this project that we have presented numerous times is that to modernize the system in such a way that we have a unified system which is automated, which can do accurate calculations that are auditable, maintainable, and also transparent. Next slide, please. Thank you, Jan. Overall, the project health is green. The reason why, I'm going to talk a little bit about the development and the requirement processes have been moving smoothly, and the deadlines are being met. As such, we sit at a count of 21 milestones out of 48. That have already been accomplished. I just want to allude to another point which I should have brought up in the previous slide itself, which was on 19th of August, we came to ITAC to get an approval on change in direction for this project, such that we basically the goal of that change request was to reduce the dependency on the legacy system as quickly as possible. In that way, the way we realigned the project is that to bring up all the priority items that are required in order for us to generate charter and district payments. And so we realigned that whole structure of the project, the development phase of it, and divided that phase one into two parts. And we got approval on August 19th, thanks to ITAC and ESSET in helping us get to that point where we would be working on a part of the product, which is called phase one, part one, until December. And Department of Ed will come back to ITAC for approval for the part two of phase one in November, December timeframe. Okay. I said, it triggered when I was talking about the milestones, there are a couple of milestones, that have completed development, and, we have demoed it to both ASSET as well as, department, as well as School Finance. And we got approval from School Finance, and we are awaiting ASSET verification. Once upon receipt of that, those two milestones will be closed as well. The budget numbers that you're seeing as of the day that we produced the slide deck, but I have updated numbers. Phase one, part one budget, that number doesn't change. That's what was approved. And the expenditure to date, based on the data that we received as of yesterday, which expenditure to date is 1,071,139, and the remaining budget reflects the addition that was made to the already spent. So the available will be 881,203. I don't have a way to present that, so I'm just reading that out. Okay. There are no issues. However, we are mitigating a risk that has been reported in the last presentation as well, which is the time it is taking and the cycles that the number of cycles that we are going through in terms of documentation that is getting reviewed by technical advisors. There is a mitigation strategy that we have put in place, and if all goes well, we probably will turn that thing into green on a couple of scheduled meetings and the outcomes of this. Okay. Like I stated, there are no issues at this point. Yeah, can we move to the next slide, please? At a high level, this is the project schedule. If you notice, the point that I was making earlier is that you'll see that pretty much most of the activities, first of all, I apologize. I don't think anybody can read the words there. At least I can't see it on my screen. But the bars, if you notice, most of them are ending pretty much in December timeframe, except one, which is the UAT that is moving into the next year, which was one of the, we develop and then UAT will take longer than, longer time, which extends into the next year. So, this reflects the proposal of, phase one, part one approval that we got. Okay. Yeah. Can we move to the next one? Thank you. The graph that you saw earlier is represented in the milestones and the percentage complete and in progress. I actually have a bit of update on this. At the time of creation of this slide, if you notice, there are adjustments, workflow, and reports for Char Common or Common are in progress, because at that time, none of the story points were completed. So the latest percentages that I got are 31% for the first in progress, 46% for the second in progress, and the third one is 48%. All this will be reflected in the upcoming slide, ITAC, which is next month. And I just wanted to give the latest. Now, stuff that is in zero is because we have not started any work on any of the story points within the project. Moving on to the next slide. It's the same thing on the, what we divided is development of the char portion of it as one table, and the requirements for the APOR, which will be part of development in the next part of phase one in this. And then there's a 40% data input related requirements that are completed, and reminder, we have not started yet. The dates reflect what is going on in this project. Can we move on to the next one, please? I have an update on this one too. So as such, we see this is the reflection of when we started the project to where we stand. Since at the time of creation of this slide, we didn't have numbers for August, but the numbers would be reflected as for August, the actual is 302,351. Obligated is 56,519, and the variance is 4,958. And the percentage reflection of the variance is 1%. All right, moving on to the next one. We mentioned in the previous ITAC presentation on August 19th, we started APOR requirements as of August 17th, and we received approval on 19th. And I'm not going to read the third bullet point. There are several documents that have gone through the technical advisor review and have received approval so that they can be presented to the document review committee. Now, so this is the process that I was talking about, that I was confident about removing the risk going forward, where there is a process we implemented in such a way that we have more traction and a better output of the approvals from the document technical advisors. Now, there are a couple of documents that are in the final stages of their approval. And the most important point that I want to allude to is the last bullet point. The document review committee, which has the final approval, is actually meeting in their next round on this Friday. And the information that is provided below on functional requirements, glossary, acronyms, traceability matrix, user interface markups, and revised business requirements, and also we'll be discussing the ITAC approved conditions and the accelerator plan on this Friday. So it's something that I wanted to bring up to everyone's attention. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you very much, Ian.
Okay, any questions from the committee? Again, this is an informational item, no voting required. Okay, well, Satish, thank you. Looks like just good continued progress. Appreciate all the team's efforts in working to keep the project tracking.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. We'll move on to our final informational update from the Department of Child Safety.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm joined by members of the Department of Child Safety who will introduce themselves, followed by an informational update to the overall status of their child's replacement project, aka Guardian.
Hello, my name is Linda Roberts. I am the program sponsor for Guardian and Chief Information Officer for the Department of Child Safety.
And hello, everybody. My name is James Dean. I'm the PMO and Finance Manager for DCSIT in support of the Guardian program.
Great. Thank you. Go ahead to the next slide, please. We'll make this really quick since we have 2 minutes. We can go ahead to the next slide. I believe after 5 years, you all know the background of this project. So I wanted to share with you last month when we came to ITAC, we shared with you that we had some issues with setting our go live date because we had some data migration. You know, it was just proving 25 years of mainframe data was quite challenging to go into our new shiny, awesome new system. So we wanted to really have the time to do some data cleansing, do some purposeful data migration, build our pipelines and so forth. So I can share with you while we will come to ITAC next month, I believe we will be ready to submit a formal change request on the new go live. I can share with you our target date will be in February. So I shared last month that it would be Q3 mindset, and will be Q3 for that. So right now, until we formally re-baseline that, and that's part of our overall PMO activities that we do within our program, the schedule remains red since we are delayed, but we do expect that after re-baselining and so forth, we can move that program health to green, especially around the schedule. Our scope, and as I had mentioned last time, our scope, so we are delivering all of version one functionality. We are working with ADOA and asset and oversight, so there's clear understanding of really what that means. But for this committee, it is all of the functionality of what Child's delivered, all the required functionality for our CWIS implementation. So CWIS is the new child welfare federal regulations, and then all of the requirements or the prioritized requirements for the needs of the agency. So child's, if you remember, you know, 4 years ago, where Guardian is that life cycle of child welfare, from everything from intake out to the permanency and financial management. Child's only did case management. And if you look at Guardian, it really is supportive of that life cycle. So it is more inclusive and therefore part of Guardian, and that is delivered in 1.0 functionality. What was supposed to be part of this program and now be handled as part of our maintenance and operations, meaning post go live, will be those priority four requirements. These were the nice to haves, some more integrations with products like NICE, which is kind of a national repository, if you will, for adoptions. And other prioritized requirements. So our risk continues to be yellow, and just a program of this size for however many work streams we have going, I don't see that really moving out of yellow, even though we have ways to manage the risks well. Our issues are green. Next slide, please. So in the, this is really small for me. I don't have glasses. I'm not sure what it says. I hope it says somewhere we're going live. I'm really sorry. I can't see it. There it is. Version 1.0 go live, 4/2/2021. And like I said, please expect a formal change request to come through. And as soon as we can get our program rebaselined, we will be submitting that. And it will be a change request to reduce the scope, as we do not expect any budget. We are not requesting additional budget line items. Next slide, please. So we wanted to bring visibility as far as the requirements, and really these are the number of requirements going in for 1.0. And then by the number of integrations, either with other data sources or with external pieces or within the program itself. So if you remember, Guardian has DocuSign, Guardian has Dynamics, Guardian has Azure and Azure Data Services, and Guardian has OnBase. So there's many different things and platforms and technologies in order to deliver this. And so we wanted to give you a view of by component, how many requirements were developed to meet this and will be delivered, as well as the integrations. Next slide. And for 1.1, this is really what we are de-scoping from the scope of Guardian, but not necessarily from the agency. We will use our I call it the day two team. Like, once all the vendors and everybody goes away and all the services have transitioned to DCS maintenance and operations team, they will continue to look at this and use our own project management practices to deliver this, and application lifecycle management as well. So I expect some of these numbers to change as priorities for the agencies change as well. So this is a snapshot in time of whatever those requirements are. And in agile development, we prioritize based on the needs of the business. As you can see, for 1.1, most of the scope was around provider management. And I can tell you it was specific around license management. And next slide, please. And the project financials. So James, do you want to make mention of this?
Yeah, sure. So there's two slides regarding the financials. This is everything from the beginning of the program from fiscal year 15 up to the last completed fiscal year of 2020. Last month, our budget was 86,088,076. That's still the case. We've spent just over 68 million. So we have about 17 million to go. But what you're seeing here is all of our historical baseline projections versus our actuals. The next slide is, if you go to that one. So here it is broken out by month for fiscal year 2021. So the way that we manage our financials is we log actuals as soon as they are paid. We don't do any type of accruals or anything like that. So for August, our original baseline was about 2.3 million. We spent about a million. So our variance was relatively high at 44%. And that's explainable considering the go live delay and a lot of our milestone based payments shifted to the right. So we'll re-baseline our financials along with the schedule so everything is in lockstep.
Thank you, James. Next slide, please. So for our project news and updates, right now we are in the data cleansing and data mapping fun bus, as I like to call it. We are busy on reports design and development. That's the last piece. Once the data is there, do we know how to build all of these reports? Some of the challenges we have with that is our report repository sitting in DES, which is called Einstein, because Childs is part of the DES program, and make sure that, you know, we know how to kind of merge that data to give good time study type federal reporting requirements. So looking at those reports designs, our program solidified our new go live date of 2/1/21, and come heck or high water, we are going live 2/1/21. I don't know, we're quite confident in that. We have, like I said, our big failure, I would say, is just the data migration effort that it really was. So, you know, it's one thing to map out the data, and it's another thing to push the data through and figure out, wait a minute, this isn't the data I thought I had. So we have a really good rinse and repeat process. We are almost done with the mappings. We're doing the coding now to get that all moved through the pipelines and to get that automated. And we do our first good full data migration full run starting in November. Next slide. Q&A. Mr. Chair,
all right.
Do you have any questions?
Yeah, well, we'll open it up quickly for questions. Otherwise, looks like good continued progress. I know you're having to hedge us a bit on how much you could share last time based on what you thought was likely, but good to see things continue to move forward. All right, committee members, any questions on this?
Chairman, go ahead, Dave. So, Linda, the data migration, a project like this is huge. Last time you were expressing the concerns. You sound more positive this time. Are you really positive? Because I mean, you got a huge problem, and I sympathize with you. Do you think we're going to be able to make it, given the work that you've done in the interim period here?
Mr. Chairman and Committee Member Byers, thank you for that question. So, yes, I don't think I'm false positive. Like my positivity is false. When we met last month, we were really just starting. You know, we had kind of refocused the teams, put these kind of war rooms together virtually, if you will, and where we thought we would measure and be able to do the progress, we hadn't quite seen the results. A month later, we're actually meeting our timeline, seeing the data go through, getting the validation done. So now I have a higher level of confidence that so the big thing is getting the mapping and audits done. The coding piece of that is the easier part, right? That's the automation and so forth. So we are done with that audit mappings, just small entities left to do. And we've seen that validation come through. So we're actually seeing the results of that. So I am positive with that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, thank you, Linda and James. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out beyond, even a little bit beyond our scheduled time. I think if we'd gotten our logistics right up front, we'd be right on the nose. But thanks for hanging out with us. Hey, our next meeting is scheduled for October 21st, and we will provide make sure that we sort out the links ahead of time for you all so that we get started timely. So thank you very much, and we'll see you next time.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. You can go ahead and stop the recording and the streaming.